Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Stu Weber at StuWeb.com, and it is Thursday, November the 18th, 2021. And I have the honor to have Professor James Fetzer on, also a declared whistleblower, as far as I'm concerned, over Sandy Hook. And we also have Professor Joe on, who's quite intelligent, quite knowledgeable about events worldwide. And I guess they probably, with their knowledge, outdoes me about 10 to 1. But with that said, I'm going to welcome Jim first. Hit us with what you got, Jim.
Well, Stu, right off the bat, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is based in New Orleans, has suspended the mandate, the decree, raising significant constitutional issues. I believe their ban is going to be permanent so that it's null and void. In a major blow to the Biden administration, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration Tuesday suspended implementation and enforcement of its emergency temporary standard on mandatory COVID vaccination. This was the declaration that employers with more than 100 employees were given until January 4th. The ruling by the Fifth Circuit Court barred OSHA from enforcing it. In fact, the experts who have studied this case will tell you that Biden never had the right to do this, that it was never legal, that it never had a basis in law, and that this whole thing was really quite a monstrous abuse of the Constitution, for which this guy and his administration appear to have nothing but contempt. No foundation, not warranted, completely unjustified. I think the ban is dead. The only route to reviving it would be to make an appeal to the Supreme Court through Judge Alito, which I think is highly unlikely. But I welcome your thoughts and responses. That's the first major development of the day.
Joe?
Okay, Jim, if you would explain to the audience the difference between a mandate and law, because I'm quite sure there's a lot of people out there that don't understand there's a difference between law and mandate.
Well, these are pronouncements from the mandates are the pronouncements from the president that are dependent upon laws for their implementation, but there are no statutes or laws in this instance, which means they only have the force of those who comply. In other words, they're actually under no obligation to comply. And it's shocking that we have been subjected to such massive abuse here. I believe it's completely dead and void now, and that it will not be capable of revival.
Okay, for those people that still don't understand what Jim is saying here, there is only one body, which is called the legislature, that can make law. Nobody else can do that. So when Jim is saying there is a difference between a mandate and law, he's saying that there's only one body in politics that can make law, and that is your legislators.
Now, this whole shot thing, you have freedom of religion, people's religion. A lot of Christians believe it's a mark of the beast. And you have your body, which you have the legal right to protect, and you can have what you want put in your body, not what they want. Even if it's law, they can't touch you, basically. So, do what you want, folks. If you're dumb enough to take the shot, well, what can I say? You're dead in 5 years.
Maybe you better tell them what happened to your father, Stu.
They shot him when he was in a nursing home, and I was locked out of the nursing home for 2 months because of this illegal prosecutor getting ready to get nailed in federal court. Anyway, they shot him. He was dead two and a half months later.
That's just awful, Stu. I had no idea. Unfortunately, my family went ahead and got the vax. They didn't tell me they were going to do it because they knew I would be opposed to it. So I'm apprehensive about what the future holds in my own case as well. But the fate of the nation hangs in the balance. We have a projection from Eagle.com that the population of the U.S. is going to diminish dramatically from 330 million in 2020 to only 65 million in 2025. And the way this will come about, the decimation of 265 million of our fellow citizens is in three stages. The masks are killing us slowly. You're recirculating oxygen-depleted air, which obviously puts a strain on your cardiovascular system, kills brain cells. Unlike skin cells, brain cells do not regenerate. I'm projecting increase in dementia that's going to rise exponentially as a consequence, and a diminution in IQ here, probably 10 points here in the short run as a consequence. Second, of course, is the vaccines, which kill you more rapidly. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny has described it. He says, perfectly designed killing machines. Luc Montagnier, the world's leading virologist, has predicted that everyone who gets a jab is going to be dead within 5 years. So I'm hoping he's wrong. But there are good reasons to think he may be right. Even the World Health Organization has a data bank of over 2 million adverse effects from taking the jab, which has just skyrocketed in the year that the jab has been in place. In fact, the year before, there were only 2,000, so it increased by 1,000 times as many in 1 year. And prior to that, there were only like 87 and then 2 or 1, so that what we're having now is more adverse effects from the jab than from all vaccinations ever used in the history of medicine. And then third, of course, to polish it off, the cargo, the supply problems are accompanied by farmers being paid to plow under their crops and threatened if they don't that they'll be sprayed with Agent Orange, which would make it virtually impossible to ever recover. You have Governor Newsom of California draining the two largest reservoirs, which were at historic highs, sufficient to sustain the drought of 5 years duration. They're now drained into the ocean. They're now record lows to annihilate the agricultural capacity of California, which stands to the United States very much as Ukraine to Russia. Or Zbigniew Brzezinski in his book, The Grand Chessboard, suggested that you could separate Ukraine from Russia, which greatly weakened the bear, because Ukraine is the breadbasket for Russia, just as California is the breadbasket for the United States. And where a deputy secretary of the Treasury said the supply problems wouldn't be resolved until every American was vaxxed. Stop and think about it. What relationship does vaxxed or not have to these supply problems unloading the cargo ships? None at all. It's obviously a deliberate policy where the Biden administration has gone all in to take out the American people, and they're going to seal the deal with mass starvation. You can see the signs if you look for them. And if you don't look for them, it'll come as a great surprise. But we ought to understand this is in the works.
They're paying the farmers. So, they're paying the farmers not to grow the crop. Plus, we had
paying them to plow them under. Yeah,
you got it. And plus the fact that we had 2 years ago such hard freezes, killed a lot of cattle. They didn't rebreed. And we're having a shortage of the meat. We're going to have a shortage of everything because of what they're doing. And it's all intentionally designed to kill population. And when some people, you know, hey, Jim, you're an ex-Marine captain. I was in the Marine Corps. I was a Lance Corporal. My question is, when do we, the ex-military, which is about, 30 to 40 million of us, when do we put a halt to this crap? That's my question. There's enough of us. Does that day come?
Well, maybe I can weigh in on that a little bit before Jim does.
Okay, go ahead, Joe.
The problem is, in operating in Arizona politics, both my son and myself got involved in Arizona politics. And what we did was, we first got involved with what were called the Tea Parties. And there was always this one narrative that was always put forth for the discussion. They never went beyond a certain point. And when we would bring up certain points concerning, like, for instance, the Federal Reserve, or if it were at that time, the facts, they would put a wet blanket on it. They wouldn't discuss it. And so the problem is that how do you get people motivated to go out and participate and to force things that should be done, that should be done? And we found out they just won't do it. They simply won't go beyond a certain point. And to say that raise up with arms, maybe you might get 10%.
The day might come. Might come. I see a lot of bad things going to happen. A lot of bad things.
Stuart, may well come to pass. It would not surprise me and might be an appropriate response to a deadly threatening situation. We've never before had an administration of the federal government that was actively seeking to destroy America. I believe at this point in time there can be no doubt about it. No doubt about it. The open borders, part of the Kalergi plan to destroy American culture with a massive influx of illegal migrants, parallel to that of Western Europe, by a massive influx of African migrants, intended to create racial mixture and disrupt the cultures. This is a deliberate plan conceived by a Jewish Zionist in the 1930s, and Biden is obviously fully implementing it here. The migrants are being flown to various red states because the Democrats want to take advantage of the potential to change the demographics and improve their voting prospects. But we've just had an additional development over and beyond what's already happened in Virginia and in New Jersey, where in Columbus, South Carolina, a Republican candidate has defeated the Democrat, despite Obama publicly endorsing the Democrat, even though Columbia's been a deep blue city for the past several years. The city councilman was still able to secure the victory. And the Democrat was also endorsed by Jim Clyburn, a very highly regarded Democrat. The surprising result was celebrated as part of a red wave seems to be sweeping both South Carolina and Virginia. It's going to be much grander than that. We have Biden with incredibly low 38% approval rating, Kamala Harris only 28%, and it's just absolutely stunning what's taking place across the nation. I do not believe that the Democrats are going to be prepared for what's going to happen. I'm projecting they're going to lose as many as 100 seats in the House alone.
Could very well be, as long as the voting machines are protected and it's all correct.
Yes. Oh, Stu, that's a very appropriate caveat. Yes, I agree completely.
You got anything to comment on that, Joe?
Yeah, because I call it the back door into the computer. In other words, it's called promiseware, and Stu is very familiar with that, where Bill Hamilton developed a computer program that could trace felons and make it easier for to keep track of them.
That was supposed to be for U.S. attorneys to use. But
yeah.
Bush took it and put it in his own pocket. Go ahead, Joe.
Another man came along and swiped it. His name was Robert Maxwell. You know him as the father of gasoline. And so that was taken over through Israel at their intel headquarters, of where they put another small CPU on top of the Intel CPU, and that was the back door into the computers. And so whether or not that it's going to be for all of the computers that are going to be used in voting? Well, we'll see.
Now, I might add to that, because I know Bill is a friend, and Bill McCoy was his private investigator, and Bill was a former defense intelligence at Chase Chichiquantera, one of the killers in Kennedy, to the Canadian border. Now, Bill did that. He did several cases, the FEMA case involving Private Tyree being illegally jailed. He did with Terry Reid, wrote the book Compromise, Clinton, Bush, and the CIA, which the book still sells, but he can't talk. good friend, etc. Now, what I did learn about this promised software, was they were using for the drug cartels, they were using for everything else. But one of the things they did is they installed in all our telephones, as an example, I'm going to try to find it here. It automatically is a software that's in here, and this one's called Com, C-O-M, dot MediaTek, M-E-D-I-A-T-E-K, dot Entitlement, dot Entitlement app. Now, if you run the IPs on this, which I did, it goes right back to the Mossad, basically. And they've installed this in everybody's new telephones, different apps that they can just take and turn on your Wi-Fi, and they can download all your information. Just thought you'd want to be aware of that. But that's part of what INS Law was about. Now, you go to my website, stuweb.com, and put in INS, I-N-S-L-A-W, hyphen L-A-W, INS Law, and you'll see the document from Bill McCoy, from Bill Hamilton, where they stole it from him. Anyway, anything to add to that, Joe?
Yeah, that's it. Is, in other words, if the fraud is going to take place, it's going to be taking place in cyberspace. That's where it's going to happen. And that would be where you're going to have some sort of experts that are conservative that are going to put up the defense against it. And that's how the elections will be saved. But if that's not done, I don't think that it's going to be bidding well for us.
Not the information flow on the internet. And I think Whitney Webb, unlimitedhangout.com, I think she did some serious articles. They were very accurate about what they were planning in August. And believe me, folks, I couldn't even post on my own website since July. And I finally got it here about 2 weeks ago to where it's operational. But boy, did they have that thing hooked up. Hooked up tight, they think. But it's working now. That's how bad it is out there. Now, there's an article on the front of my website called, you just mentioned it. Not INS Law, but it's about the NSA. And there's a picture of it. You can find it. Click on it. It gives you a pretty good article in there about what's going on. Jim, you want to add to any of that?
Well, Stu, I want to pick up your mention of JFK. We're approaching the 58th observance of the assassination. Oliver Stone has a new film that is going to be released on the 22nd. I hope it makes a valuable contribution to the study of the death of our 35th president, as did his magisterial film JFK, but where he was misled in that instance by Robert Grogan, who concealed the fact that we knew Lee Oswald was standing in the doorway of the book depository at the time the motorcade passed by, which meant that he not only could not be the lone demented gunman, but could not be one of what turned out to be eight different shooters who are participating in the assassination. He also led Oliver Stone to the false belief that the whole movies, in particular the Zapruder film, was authentic, but has been massively re-edited. In fact, they removed over 100 frames, turning from Houston onto Elm, and over 400 frames after the driver, William Greer, brought the limousine to a halt to make sure JFK would be killed. Stone posited three hit teams, when, as I've already mentioned, there turned out to have been eight. The different groups who were the sponsors of the assassination, including the CIA, the Joint Chiefs, the anti-Castro Cubans, the Mafia, the Eastern establishment surrounding the Fed, the Texas oil men, and Israel, each appeared to have put up their own shooter, where the hitmen included LBJ's personal hitman, Malcolm Mack Wallace, where no shots were fired from the alleged assassin's lair on the sixth floor of the book depository. Three shots were fired from the Dell Tech with a man, Leonard Carcano, the only unsilenced weapon involved to create the acoustical impression of only three shots having been fired, and more, where now I'm apprehensive that a fellow named Jim DiEugenio has performed the same role as Grota did in relation to JFK with this new additional sequel. We shall see what happens. Many may know that the Warren Commission dictated, which was created by LBJ in order to preempt other investigations, were actually making rapid progress in sorting out what had really happened under the control of the FBI as a sole investigative agency, where Lyndon was the brains behind the assassination to begin with, and LBJ and J. Edgar was aiding and abetting him and covering it up. Where the Warren Commission designated that the documents they had acquired, all the evidence, should be not released to the public for 75 years. At the time, 75 years was the average life expectancy of American citizens, so the intent clearly was to ensure that no one had been alive at the time of the assassination would be alive at the time of the release of the documents. Of course, in fact, the creation of the Assassination Records Review Board in the meanwhile, and the JFK Records Act, has led to the release of a lot of evidence where Donald Trump wanted to release the rest of it, but where he was dissuaded from doing so on grounds of national security, which is revealing in and of itself, since if the official account of the Warren Commission were true, there is no national security aspect, so how can the documents be locked up on the grounds of national security? What was released under Trump, by the way, which was not put online so you could do a digital search, has nevertheless been painstakingly studied page by page by Larry Rivera and disclosed that the whole event, the whole allegation of Lee Oswald having traveled to Mexico City to secure a peace edict to make his escape to Russia was a total fabrication. Indeed, the participants included three presidents of Mexico who were assets of the CIA, and where J. Edgar would put out official memorandum to his station chiefs that someone was in Mexico City impersonating Lee Oswald, which I submit is sufficient in and of itself to establish that this was a conspiracy. We now have a parallel because the FDA is asking the court for 55 years to fully release Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine data. Get this. The Food and Drug Administration asked the federal judge on November 15th to give it until the year 2076 to fully release documents in its possession tied to the approval of the Pfizer biotech COVID-19 vaccine. The FDA's request was made in a filing part of a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit by a medical transparency group. The government told the court it has 329,000 pages of documents responsive to the request, proposed releasing 500 pages of not to allow for redactions of exempt material. At that rate, the FDA would fully release the records in question in just under 55 years. The plaintiff, Public Health and Medical Professionals for Transparency, is a group of doctors and scientists, including Harvey Risch, a professor of epidemiology at the Yale School of Public Health. The group filed the lawsuit after the FDA denied their request to expedite the release of the records. The plaintiff and the defendant, unable to reach an agreement on a disclosure schedule, are seeking a hearing to argue their case before the judge. You may eventually make a decision. But just look at the absurdity. People are dying right and left, being seriously harmed by these drugs that the FDA, which is supposed to serve the role of protecting the American people from the harmful medical products and procedures, where under ordinary circumstances, a mere handful of adverse effects would have required the FDA to withdraw from availability to the public. Yet now, when we have millions of adverse effects, and I believe millions of deaths have already occurred as a consequence, we want 55 years to fully release the vaccine data. This is grotesque and absurd and a clear indication that the FDA is our only controlled subsidiary of the power behind this whole effort, which seems to control not only the FDA, but the CDC, even the American Medical Association, and of course, American media, which is a Rothschild banking empire. This is a disgrace.
It is a disgrace. Joe, you want to comment?
Just ditto to what Jim Fetzer has said, because it comes down to the point they want to reduce the world's population down to around 500 million, and the Western European countries are standing in that way. And so that is why you are seeing this flood of third world nation people coming in and taking, you know, over the country, because in their own country it was a civil war. And so you have all of these people that are escaping those civil wars, and it's just not in Europe and the United States and Canada, but it is also in Australia.
And it's all intentionally designed this way, period. This is what we're all facing. This is what we're trying to get across to everybody. It's going to be bad. Look at the prices of everything going up.
Now, of course, as Jim has already pointed out, if you take a look at your supermarkets, take a look about how many products are behind each product, and you'll see that the product shelves are thinning out.
It's very true.
In other words, there is a problem of food getting from producer to the supermarket.
And I've seen a shortage of all kinds of stuff. Packaged fish, frozen fish, tilapia. I like it. You can't get it sometimes. Walmart, places like that, and packages. They're not available.
Well, what Joe's talking about are signs of this massive policy of food shortage and deliberate starvation. Henry Kissinger observed long ago that if you want to control government, control the money. If you want to control a population, control the food. They're using that technique, I believe, to complete the reduction, where I speculated over why the ideal number should be 500 million. And one correspondent explained to me, which may well be true, that in Talmudic Judaism, every Jew is entitled to have 40 slaves, and you calculate the world population of Jewry and 40 slaves apiece, and the number comes out to be approximately 500 million. I haven't sought a verification, but that sounds all too plausible to me.
You know, I'm looking at, you remember George Washington's vision, Joe?
Oh, yeah.
I think I'm going to post it with this radio show. People need to see this.
If you get a chance... This is for the listening audience. If you get a chance, you can read George Washington's vision at Valley Forge. And it was a prediction of what would happen to the United States.
It's pretty powerful. I'll put it up with the show, underneath the link of the show today. Gentlemen, what are the subjects you want to touch on?
Well, I want to turn to the current situation where the jury is deliberating in the Kyle Rittenhouse trial in Kenosha, which is just a hop, skip, and a jump away from my home. Among the many commentators on the case, Alan Dershowitz has observed that Rittenhouse should be acquitted if the decision is made on the basis of evidence and the law, and then sue the liberal media for their deliberate and willful lies. The scholar said the Illinois teenager charged with killing two men and wounding another during Black Lives Matter riots in Kenosha should be acquitted and then go on the offensive against the media who branded him a white supremacist vigilante. If I were a juror, I would vote that there was reasonable doubt, that he did not act in self-defense, and in fact, he did act in self-defense, and these are the very meticulous analysis evidence presented by a legal scholar that shows in relation to the six charges that were originally brought against him, he was satisfying all the elements in the first five of self-defense, which include the imminence of the danger, the lethality of the threat, that he had taken measures to avoid it, that he only acted in the last resort in order to defend himself, all of which were satisfied across the board. So, then he will bring lawsuits. That's the way to answer. Vigilante justice is what CNN is doing, not what a 17-year-old kid under pressure may have done right or wrong. And CNN involved in vigilante justice. It's a New Yorker that's guilty of vigilante justice. Comparing the Rittenhouse case to that of the former Kentucky high school student Nicholas Sandman, who became the target of left-wing media attacks following an encounter with a Native American activist and drummer in Washington, D.C., Sandman sued CNN and the Washington Post, where the network and the paper wound up settling. I think this is a very significant situation here. And everything I have seen, and I follow the case very closely and made many reports about it, indicate that he is clearly acting in self-defense. But where the prosecution has committed any number of violations of his rights during the trial, including raising issues about his silence after the event until he appeared in court and took the stand, which the judge had already ruled was out of bounds, given our life under Miranda. That's a constitutional right the prosecutor was infringing. A more recent stop, where he actually picked up Kyle's AR-15 and pointed it at members of the jury with his finger on the trigger, which is a blatant violation of elementary gun safety, and where then it turns out just Saturday, they acknowledged that a video that was taken by a drone of the events was actually a compressed version and not one that's clear and precise as that what they actually had in their possession. So they withheld evidence that was exculpatory from the defense, which had previously made a motion to dismiss with prejudice on the grounds of prosecutorial misconduct. And where if the motion were granted, that would mean that the charges could not be refiled. He could not be retried, even if there's a hung jury in this case. And while I agree that all of the evidence in the law are on the side of Kyle Rittenhouse, the judge, who in every other way acted in an exemplary fashion, committed two mistakes that I think qualify on the order of blunders. The first was he did not sequester the jury. That means they were going home each night and that their homes, where I have no doubt BLM and other activists were tracking them, have been the recipients of threats. The judge has received threats himself, which may be sufficient to intimidate jurors to not act in accordance with the law and the evidence. And second, he gave them jury instructions that were complicated and convoluted, whereas he had the opportunity to simplify them and make it very clear that, you know, how they apply to this case and the judgment of the jurors. For that reason, I believe it's now become probable that we're going to have a hung jury, because in order to convict or acquit, you must be unanimous among all the jurors. I believe for the factors I've cited, we're going to have a hung jury, and that the judge, as a consequence, is going to accept the defense motion to dismiss the charges with prejudice. He's been very responsible here, but he did commit those two blunders that, in my opinion, has greatly complicated the situation for the jurors. Your thoughts?
Well, he did drop the charge against him on the gun, so he's not charged with the gun charge.
Excellent. That's such a good point. The prosecutor even made the absurd argument that if you bring a gun to a situation, you have forfeited your right to self-defense. Think about it in application to everyone with concealed carry. That would mean if you conceal carry, in order to defend yourself, if necessary, you would have forfeited your right. I mean, it was just absurd. Plus, prosecutor has to know the gun charge had no validity because it's a function of the length of the barrel. This was a standard AR-15 with a legal barrel, so the judge did dismiss a charge that most thought was the most likely for the jury to find him guilty of having violated. So you're absolutely right. That's another example of prosecutorial misconduct. Joel.
I think right now I should insert that right now BLM and Antifa are gathering around the courthouse at Kenosha. Right now, they're doing it. Now, if I were the mayor or a part of the city council, I would definitely begin setting up the defensive perimeters around the courthouse with an overwhelming show of force.
Look, they sent in supposedly 500 National Guard, 500?
Around the courthouse, Stu, is what I'm talking about. Around the courthouse now, with full use of all the tools, including gas, tear gas. Able to implement it and use it. Well, in other cases, the police have not been allowed to use it. And that's one of the primary tools for dispersing a mob. So, in other words, Antifa now is using their show of force to intimidate the jury, is my estimation.
That's probably what it is, Joe.
Oh, I have no doubt about it. Joel's 100% correct. It's an effort to intimidate. The Wisconsin State Journal displayed its left-wing bias by publishing a lengthy commentary suggesting Kyle Rittenhouse, guilty or innocent, was wrong to be there, accusing him of being a vigilante and having illegally possessed weapons. I was so incensed, I wrote a letter to the editor in the expectation, based on past experience, they would not, of course, publish it. But let me share with you what I wrote.
Did they publish it, Jim?
I'm sorry?
Did they publish your letter?
No. I'm saying they're not gonna publish it, I'm sure. Okay. They are only gonna publish one-sided views. Get this, I suggested the title. Rioting gun, self-defense ban. Editor, it's embarrassing that you have published an ideological defense of the Rittenhouse prosecution where three members of the same family, the mayor, the DA, and the detective, appear to have conspired against Kyle to deny his legal rights. Kyle took the citizens' commitment to defend property and human rights more seriously than the Kenosha police, who stood down while looting and rioting was taking place. He sought to provide medical assistance for which he was attacked. A meticulous legal analysis by Andrew Branca, B-R-A-N-C-A, available online, provides a thorough and detailed exoneration on every count. That's why the prosecution now wants to include lesser charges. They know they have no case. Kyle was kicked in the face by one rioter. Another tried to break his neck with a skateboard. A third admitted he had a handgun that was pointing at Kyle, who shot him in the arm. They, not Kyle, were the aggressors. It's insulting for anyone to suggest that he was acting as a vigilante and patrolling with illegally obtained guns, neither of which appears to be the case. On the contrary, Kyle's actions were heroic. As a former Marine Corps officer who supervised 15 DIs and 300 recruits through basic training, his performance was admirable. The attacks were imminent and deadly. His actions were reasonable. The media and its allies must attack Kyle because his example of self-defense is inspiring, and he showed the world why an AR-15 might make a difference for the public good. He deserves our admiration. James H. Fetzer, PhD.
That's a good letter. That's a good letter,
absolutely.
Jim.
Yes, absolutely. To the point.
Now, gentlemen, what other subjects should we touch on? Jim?
Well, Stu, the fact is that the Biden administration is in deep trouble, that we have losses that are going on here suggesting they're going to face a calamity in the midterm elections, provided that the election is conducted in appropriate fashion. We even had a state senator in the Lone Star State switching his allegiance from the Democratic Party and joining the GOP. It is an effort to blast Democrats in D.C. for not sharing the values of South Texas residents. It's not hard to believe he's talking about Biden and his failed agenda, especially in relation to migrants. He represents Latinos who've been residing in South Texas for many, many years, decades. They have long-term family. To the shock of many Democrats, voters in South Texas, a largely Hispanic population, are ditching the left to vote for Republicans. The GOP scored several key wins in recent special elections. It appears Hispanic Americans, actual citizens, don't appreciate Biden opening the floodgates to migrants, border jumpers, drug cartels, and others. These people have been living in America for generations. Some of their families were here since before the founding of Texas, and they are watching their homes, communities, and cities become overrun with outsiders who do not share their traditions and values. Why did Biden not realize this? For years, Democrats have tried hard, spent billions trying to flip Texas blue. They claimed all of America to be the state purple. But if recent elections are any indication, they're failing to even hold on to areas they thought they controlled. This is another indication of the future, where there's virtual unanimous agreement that Biden's administration has been a disaster.
It is a disaster. Joe, you want to comment?
Yeah, I can, for those of you that want to really get at what Jim is talking about, go to Real Anthony Aguero on YouTube, and he is this young Mexican guy from my hometown of El Paso that has done a tremendous job of showing what the border is and what the border is not. And he doesn't do a lot of commentary because most of it is showing you what the border is and how it's happening. For instance, there was one place called Acuna, and that was a border crossing, and he was down there videotaping the people coming across. And they would put them on a raft, they'd give them life preservers, and the coyote would pull the raft across the water. Now remember, the Rio Grande is not like the Mississippi bed. A lot of it is just a dry riverbed. And the water down there is maybe waist deep. And so they pull the raft across, and then they get across, they help them out of the boat, and then they walk down to where the Border Patrol is. Border Patrol spends 99% of their time doing paperwork. They're not kidding. They sit there. In one sitting, I saw around 600 people that they had to process. 600 people sitting down on the ground, waiting their turn to be processed. And so take a look at his video so that you get a good idea about what Anthony says. See these people? They're here not to integrate. They're here to take your place.
Got a point. You got a hell of a lot of problems in this country, from every angle.
I have one more story to toss into the hopper.
Okay.
We have Alex Jones found liable in a fourth defamation case brought by Sandy Hook victims' families. Now, the Connecticut judge who ruled here in a suit brought by parents of children purportedly killed in the Sandy Hook shooting, entered a default judgment against him because he refused to follow the court orders to turn over documents. In other words, while some might think this is an indication that the shooting in Newtown in 2012 was real, it, like the other cases involved here on several procedural grounds and never reached the question of fact about whether anyone actually died at Sandy Hook. That has never been adjudicated, even in my own case. I recently submitted a 500-word summary to the Biden Commission on Supreme Court Reform and to investigative journalists and advocates of honest judiciaries in the Foster versus Fetzer Dane County Court case number 218 CV 003122. There's an excellent blog that has an archive of the documents in this case at postpswtc.com/pvf.html. I repeat that. postpwtc.com/pvf.html. My summary reads as follows. Dear commissioners, journalists, and advocates, denying the defendant a defense. My publications include co-editing Nobody Died at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill to promote gun control. 2015, second edition, 2016. I brought together 13 experts, including 6 PhD professors, to set out what really happened at Sandy Hook Elementary School on December 14, 2012. They discovered the school had been closed by 2008, and there were no students or teachers there. They had conducted an active shooter drill presented to the public as mass murder to promote gun control. The FEMA manual used to orchestrate the exercise is included in Appendix A. The book was published on 22 October 2015, banned by Amazon.com on 19 November 2015, even though it had sold nearly 500 copies. Amazon had 20 books about Sandy Hook at the time, 19 of which were held the official narrative. In response to the ban, I released it for free as a PDF. A colleague tells me it has been downloaded over 10 million times. Access had to be stopped. A complaint was filed by one of the parents to allege I defamed him by my claim that an uncertified death certificate for his son, which he had posted on a blog, was fake. As I would argue in brief, under Connecticut law, not even parents are allowed to possess uncertified death certificates. During the pretrial conference, the judge declared he would not permit the defense that Sandy Hook had been a FEMA drill, stating, quote, whether or not Sandy Hook ever happened or not is not relevant to this. The truthfulness or the accuracy of the death certificate. Now, I understand the defendant's overall theory of believing that it never happened, and I'm not going to take the bait and let this case go down that rabbit hole. The death certificate, however, plainly states that the decedent died on 14 December 2012 at Sandy Hook Elementary School from multiple gunshot wounds. So how could the defense that nobody died at Sandy Hook not be relevant to the truthfulness or accuracy of the death certificate? I submitted 4 versions of the death certificate and reports of 2 forensic document experts who testified all 4 versions were fake. The judge consulted with the plaintiff's lead counsel and explained that excluding them would be grounds for an appeal. So he set them aside as someone else's opinion. The most basic fact remained in dispute that negligence was never addressed, but I was found guilty of defamation nonetheless. A trial for damages awarded $450,000. As a retired professor of philosophy, I usually detect mistakes in arguments and can avoid being played for a sucker and a sap. In this case, however, I was misled by my naive confidence in the rule of law, of which I have now been thoroughly disabused.
Now, Jim, I investigated Sandy Hook, and I'm in agreement with you. It was a drill. It was all fake. I mean, all the evidence is there, and you went beyond your investigation. I mean, you did a thorough job of it, proved it. And then Jones comes along, he makes some comment about it, and then he takes a hit intentionally without any evidence whatsoever, and his insurance company pays for it. That tells me he set you up or tried to. Alex Jones is an Israeli stooge, folks, in case you haven't figured out. He's Division Number 5 FBI. Nobody makes millions of dollars doing radio shows, and he does. And he pays one hell of a lot of alimony to his ex-wife. Okay, where does he get that money? Okay? That's the question. Where does he get his payroll at? Look at some of the people that have worked for him and have brought out after they signed secrecy agreements and later talked about him. He's a stooge. He was being used by Ted Gunderson to try to smash me, and Gunderson was an FBI troll stooge. Period. Enough said. I don't like Alex Jones.
Joe, would you like to comment as rounding out our conversation of today?
I think that what Jim has said for you folks out there, he is telling you the exact truth of what really happened at Sandy Hook. And one of the things that is not really brought out is that the Church of Satan under Anton LaVey moved to Newtown before the incident happened. And that says a lot right there, particularly if you have followed Stu and his marriage to Leonard Melvin and his association with the Denver Cabal Satanists.
Part of the Rockefeller Group, all part of one. 12 disciples of Satan. Now, Jim, they had you, or a piece on Sandy Hook on 60 Minutes, and I think it was Gary Webb was the one that they videotaped. Do you want to talk about the slander that they did on 60 Minutes against you?
Stu, I'm not sure I know of this. 60 Minutes?
Well, this was a while back. A few months back, they had Gary Webb on there videoing him and talking about the conspiracy stuff that was floating on the internet. I think you mentioned it to me. And I watched it, and we talked later, as I recall. But anyway.
Stu, I don't know why. Maybe I'm just dealing with so many issues, but that one seems to have slipped by me. I'm unaware of that. I do know when one of these shows interviewed this fellow who calls himself Leonard Posner, he came here for a video deposition, and I became convinced he was not the same guy whose photograph has appeared millions of times around the internet. That he was in he's 20 years younger and 100 or more pounds lighter. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And when I raised the issue with the court and sought to provide an impeachment witness against him, which I believe I was entitled to under Wisconsin law, I was, for my efforts, held in contempt of court. And in addition to the $450,000 liability that the jury for damages brought against me, he added the attorney fees for his miscreant's legal crews, which accumulated $650,000. So basically, I have been fined $1,000,000 for speaking the truth about Sandy Hook.
Oh.
This is for you, Jim. You'll enjoy this. I picked up on a little station. Jones, for the audience out there, got sued that he had to disclose his finances. He refused and was then found in contempt and then fined. Now, what Jones is going to do is that his lawyer, in a smart move, appealed it. And it will sit for at least 5 to 7 years. Nothing will be done. So Jones is not going to pay out any money.
Interesting.
That's pretty fascinating, Joel. That's pretty fascinating. By the way, Pallets and Bricks are showing up in Kenosha just as they have elsewhere. There's a fascinating report about it. That ties back to billionaires who seem to be behind a lot of what's going on here. It's pretty shocking, all things considered. And, you know, there will be much more developing. As I mentioned earlier, I believe now, because court did not sequester the jury, and because his convoluted jury instructions that were, in all probability, going to have a hung jury. But I do believe he will take the appropriate action and dismiss the charges with prejudice.
I hope so. Kid, it's a self-defense issue, period. Too many videos out there, you can see it. Any other subject either one of you want to touch on?
I think I'm good, sure, Joe. So go ahead.
Yeah, I'm good, sir.
Any last words, Joe?
No, that's it. I think everybody pay attention to what Jim has said. He's hit the nail on the head.
There you go. With that said, Jim, last word?
Well, anyone who are so inclined to support my efforts on behalf of the First and the Second Amendment, there are several ways you could do that. You could send a check or money order to James Fetzer Legal Defense Fund, 800 Violet Lane, Oregon, Wisconsin, 53575. Or, if they prefer account-to-account transfers using Zelle, you can donate directly to my Legal Defense Fund using my email address under Zelle. It goes directly there, jfetzer, jfetzer@t.umn.edu. Let me emphasize, don't mortgage the house, but if you have 20 bucks or whatever to throw in, if we got 1,000 people contributing $20, that would be a giant step in the right direction.
When you gotta have help, you gotta have help. So folks, help him out. With that said, Jim, give out the address of where your main website is, where they can find things from there.
Well, Stu, temporarily, my website's down because Leonard Posner filed a copyright claim, of which I was unaware until they shut it down. We should have it back up in the next 24 hours, however, at jamesfetzer.org. Meanwhile, you can find my videos, including a special report on the assassination of JFK, on my BitChute channel, Jim Fetzer. Just put in BitChute channel, Jim Fetzer. You'll find it right there at your fingertips.
There you go. There you go. Jim, I want to thank you. And Joe, I want to thank you both for coming on. Good show.
All right.
Have a good day.
My pleasure, Stu.
Thank you.